Absolutely. And Leanne out there in Coleman, Alabama, you'll be next on Coast to Coast AM when we come right back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Rosemary, on the pictures that you supplied us that we have on coasttocoastam.com right now, one of the pictures looks like, as you call, a shadow person in a theater. Tell me about that.
It's an excellent picture of what possibly is a shadow person. This was taken by Jason Tito of the Ghost Research Society of Chicago in October of 2007, after one of Troy Taylor's conferences and haunted investigations. In fact, I had given a presentation on shadow people at the conference, and it seems that when you focus a lot of attention on the topic of shadow people, that also helps to manifest them and bring them in.
Interesting.
The photograph was taken from the balcony of the theater. The figure was not visible Jason when the photograph was taken. There are no accountable light sources where you could say that's got to be a shadow projected of something or someone on the wall. If you go to the website and look at the photo, you'll see how lumpy it looks. And this is very characteristic of shadow people when people see them. They're not perfectly outlined people. They're misshapen in some way. They're not completely formed. Usually, especially, they're not formed at the bottom, like to have feet, for example. There's absolutely no explanation for how this shadow got cast on the wall. 6 months later, when we were all back in June of last year, we were hoping that the figure might manifest again. In fact, we had massive amounts of equipment focused on that spot. And true to the trickster-like nature of the phenomena that you encounter in the paranormal, we had no sightings as dramatic like that. People saw some shadows flitting around, but nothing quite like that. Out of all the photographs I've ever examined of what people felt were shadow people, this, I think, is one of the best. There's no good explanation for how this figure got captured on the wall. And I'd also just like to mention that Dale Kaczmarek, the president of the GRS, has just recently appointed me to be their East Coast representative.
Oh, so good for you.
Quite excited about that.
Good for you. Okay, back to the phones now. Leanne in Coleman, Alabama, you're up with us. Hi, Leanne.
Hey, George. Hey, Rosemary.
Hi.
Well, I had a question about dreams. Ever since I was little, I have always had, you know, precognitive dreams where I would dream things and then they would usually write just within a few days would come true. And as I got older, I would say probably 17, 18 on up, I would have these horrible dreams where I was in my bedroom at home in the house that I grew up in. And, I mean, this is long before I knew, you know, anything about, you know, 2012 or the end of the world. You know, I mean, at that age, I didn't really think much of it. But I would have these dreams where I was in my old bedroom at home, and I'd be listening to the radio, and I would just be sitting there listening to it, and all of a sudden, you know, how these things would come on where, you know, the radio station was about to sign off the air, and it would be like in this really scary voice. And I would try to, you know, frantically change the station, and it would be the same thing all over again. And then I would look out my window, and it would be just pitch black. I mean, I couldn't see anything. And I would try to get out of my room because I was so scared, and I couldn't get out of my room. And I felt like there was, like, going to be a series of events that were about to happen, and if I could, you know, if I was able to get out of my room, that it was my job to go out and, you know, notify everybody that this was about to happen, but I couldn't get out. And, you know, it's like I was invisible. I was trapped in this room. And, I mean, it would just it's happened over and over and over all my entire life.
What causes the trapping feeling?
Repeating dreams like this often deal with anxiety issues, and it's not about big events in the world that are going to happen. It's about what's happening on the inside. There's a lot going on in this kind of dream, Leanne, and it would take quite a while to unravel all the pieces of it. But the nut of it is that there are feelings of being trapped. There's no way out. There's something, forces beyond one's control, i.e. coming from the outside, are taking over. The voice on the radio is often the voice from within, warning that something, some upheaval is about to happen. And one of the standard approaches in dream work is to relate that to what's going on internally in a person's life. Anxiety situations can trigger these repeating dreams, and sometimes it takes a good amount of work with a licensed professional, a therapist, to get to the meat of it.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to some other callers. Let's go to James in San Antonio, Texas, on the Wild Card line. Welcome to Coast. Hi, James.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
I got a quick. Is there a way to tell the difference between like precognitive dream and like a lucid dream? So I've had a dream reoccurring over the past 2 years, something similar to 9/11. I would be sitting watching TV and everything, and I would hear this voice say, "Watch what we're going to do," and then there will be nuclear explosions in New York, Los Angeles, Tokyo, France, and London.
There are certain signs that people learn to recognize as precognitive. They vary individual by individual. There's a signature pattern to people who have frequent precognitive dreams, that when these certain elements show up in a dream, they know it's precognitive. It's not an ordinary dream about themselves. For example, two of the signs to my mother in her precognitive dreams, one was a nauseated feeling in the dream and also when she woke up. And if her own dead mother was in the dream, that indicated to her that it was precognitive. There are people who dream of symbols like certain fruits present, smells in the air, colors in the dream. And the only way that you learn your own signature pattern is just through trial and error. You have the dream, and then the event happens, and you begin to associate the elements in the dream because these patterns repeat. Lucid dreams can be precognitive. Concerning events like blow-ups and disasters, cataclysms in major cities, it's not uncommon for people to have these kinds of dreams in any state of anxiety. We've got a lot of worries about the world right now. Oftentimes they reflect usually what's going on inside of us. In fact, that's where we have to look first. Dreams are about our emotional well-being, and we have to relate them first to what's going on in our lives before we start projecting them out into the greater environment.
Rosemary, this was before your time, but the original Superman comic books, DC Comics, had a trickster in them called Mr. Mickius Picklick, and he was a fictional supervillain. He was a trickster. But the people who developed him, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, back in one of the first volume issues, September of 44, that was in volume 1, number 30, as a matter of fact, brought him from the fifth dimension. And, you know, he was a trickster for Superman. But I found it fascinating. He had a little hat. And, you know, he looks like a little figurine, an evil little person. But he could be a shadow person. It's kind of interesting the way they developed him. Fifth dimension.
I think that a lot of our visionary, creative people intuit or experience things that are in these paranormal realities, and that could very well be the case with this.
Let's go to Kalamazoo. Danny, welcome to Coast. Hi, Danny.
Hi. Hi, George. You cost me more sleep than my Scorpio husband, I swear.
Good.
I was already in bed, and I was just driven to get up and go get the phone. And by the way, you were talking about your one-year-old grandson,
yeah.
or grandchild who has the dreams. My daughter, who is now 16, Andrea, when she was 6 years old, now my mother passed away when she was 52 days old. And when she was six, she came to me and she told me, Mama, I had a dream about Grandma. And then, of course, she couldn't have known what Mom looked like. She described the sewing room that my mother had.
Okay.
She described everything just absolutely perfectly. And, of course, she couldn't have known. And Grandma was sewing this dress, and I had her describe the dress. And then I pulled out a picture, and I said, was it this dress? And she said, yes. That was the dress we buried my mom in.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, yeah, children have dreams.
They do.
Rosemary, I've heard of, in the 70s, people smoking catnip, but I never heard of drinking catnip tea, so I'll have to try that.
Oh, it's widely available and quite tasty, I might add.
Well, I have catnip in the house, but it's for my cats.
I wouldn't try that.
Don't use that. Okay. I have, and Tommy, let me hold, bless his heart, so that I could talk to you about this. I had, starting in the 80s, a reoccurring dream, that happened once or twice a month, and it took me to a house that I figured it was all a past life thing, is what I thought it was at first. I was in a house that I'm pretty sure was in Atlanta. Now, I'm from Michigan. I've never even been through Georgia except to drive through, but I can describe this house top to bottom, even the broken beams in the attic. I know where the hidden panels are. I know the servant's entrance. I know everything about it. I know what's new. I know what's old. And I did. I used to think it was just a past life thing. But a couple of years ago, while I was there, and there were a couple of women who worked in the kitchen there who could see me when I was visiting. You know, I just thought I was visiting a past life thing. And there was a couple of women who saw me, and I just giggled about that because I thought, well, that's cool. These people can see me while I'm dreaming about them. I witnessed a murder there. I witnessed two guys kill another guy. And it really shook me up. I mean, I came up out of my bed just screaming. And I went back and dreamed again about the place just a few days later. And the two women in the kitchen who used to be able to see me were discussing me. And they were talking about the fact that they thought I had something to do with this murder. And then they turned and looked at me. And I just started talking to them. And I described the two guys that killed this other guy, because the murder obviously happened in the present, but yet all this time I thought it was a past life thing, even though there was new things that were obviously of now. And then once I described who these guys were that killed this other guy, I've never had the dream again. And I actually feel a sense of loss. It's like I want to go back and visit this house that I had begun to consider my own from a past life.
Maybe it's better to leave these things alone, huh?
Well, perhaps, but, you know, now I wonder, was there a murder? Did I, you know, what was that about? Because it went on for 20-some-odd years. And then I witnessed this murder. I tell them what the guys looked like who did the murder, and then I've never had the dream again.
People do dream about real events that they are not connected with in waking life, and nobody knows why that happens. Why do some people tune in to some things like that? Without doing research, I mean, unless you do research to try and validate that an actual event like the one you dreamed took place, there's no way of knowing if it was a real event. One speculation as to what was going on is that there was some sort of connection or closure that needed to be made with these two women figures in the dream. And once that was accomplished, and you were some sort of enabler, then it was no longer necessary for you to have the dream. You may have played a role in some sort of a psychic drama that you'll never really know the real solution to, the real big picture of. That's one possible explanation.
Sigmund Freud, when he got into his work of psychiatry through dreams a lot, I don't know if you've studied him at all, Rosemary, but I'm wondering what triggered him to go in that direction in his career.
I don't really know off the top of my head why he decided to look at dreams. You know, he considered them the royal road to the unconscious. He tended to look at them from the standpoint of repressions of emotions and repressions of sexual tension.
Mm-hmm.
And he could see these themes played out in the dreams of his patients. And, of course, he and Carl Jung had quite a disagreement over the whole picture on dreams and why the two of them split, why Carl Jung went off on his own, because he saw a broader picture in dreams than Freud did.
They were both, though, I think, years ahead of everybody else.
Absolutely. And in fact, those two figures were really the pioneers in restoring the importance of the dream in terms of some sort of deep meaning to us psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and also from the standpoint of healing.
Okay, next up, let's go to Kathleen in Kodiak, Alaska. You're on Coast to Coast.
I'll be doggone.
You made it.
I did. Boy, a lot of interesting people on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've got a couple things. One that struck my thoughts was you were talking about dreams of flying. When I was a little girl, there's only about five dreams in my whole life that I really can say I remember. And this one dream just kept coming back. I would say 2-3 times a week when I was little and up to probably about 30 years old. And then all of a sudden it was gone. But I would go out in the yard or I'd be out in a school field and I could put my arms out and take off, fly above all the other kids in the schoolyard or anybody. I could see cars going by. The wind would hit me in my face. I loved it. I wanted to go back to sleep so I could go back to that dream. Unbelievable. And then I don't know why it kept coming back and or why it just stopped at about 30 years old, but it did. And then one other dream, this was my daughter's dream. Actually, she saw it and a dream. This was in about October of 2003. And a very good friend of mine, Timothy Treadwell, was killed, he and his girlfriend, by a bear up here.
Oh, my God.
And they were eaten alive by this little guy. Yeah. But my daughter, Timothy would come up from Malibu in the summer, and I would store all of his things in the wintertime and help him and whatever. And I happened to be down in Palm Springs that October. My other son and daughter-in-law was having another baby. So I wasn't up here, but he came in at the end of September, always from the field, put his stuff in my basement and left for California. He came in and he got a hold of my daughter, put the stuff away, and the next day said, I'm going back out. And he went on back out. And she didn't have a good feeling about it. And that night, she dreamt that he was going to be killed. And he was. And both he and Amy.
Rosemary, what is it about the connection that allows that to happen? The wireless internet. It's there.
It is indeed there. And it operates in very quirky ways. Why does one person get a dream message like that? And obviously, we don't all dream of people that we love who are about to cross over. The best explanation that anyone can arrive at, and I believe this myself, is that psi is like electricity. It finds the path of least resistance. And that when people are receivers of these sorts of messages, it's because they've got something innate within them in their consciousness or energy field that enables them to pick up these signals that are traveling around, and the psi is like it'll go just like electricity for the metal pole.
We'll be back with final phone calls for Rosemary Ellen Guiley. We'll also do our traditional shout out to all of you in just a moment. We'll be right back. Well, those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, thank you for supporting Coast to Coast AM, Streamlink members, XM Satellite, various chat rooms and groups, including the NighthawkZone.com folks, Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, the National Radio Club, Sorcery, IRC, the MySpace groups, Yahoo Chat, Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, Above Top Secret, and so many more. Thank you for keeping Coast to Coast the number one rated late night talk show in the world. Well, welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. And, of course, your phone calls as well. You're getting, and I'm getting, photographs of shadow people and things like that that people want you to have. So I'll make sure we get them forwarded on to you.
Thank you. Okay? I'd love to examine them. I think they're very difficult to photograph.
Has anybody ever been hurt, as far as you're concerned, by a shadow person?
I have no cases of serious harm. People seem to feel psychologically harmed more than physically. The most common physical issue is feelings of suffocation, like the nightmare hag syndrome.
Yes.
I just had an email today from a man who said that he'd had an experience with a shadow person when he was younger, and the figure rushed, when he observed the figure, woke up and saw it, the figure rushed at him, and as it came toward him, he had a feeling of intense suffocation. He said
that's a horrible feeling.
Quite a horrible feeling. I had another case where a woman said she woke up and the shadow person was breathing on her, and she had the very strong feeling that its breath was poisonous and it was trying to poison her. So these are the most common things. People have tried to grab shadow people. Their hands go through thin air. Some people say they have felt pressed, sat on, or grabbed by these figures. There's a feeling that they're going to be seriously harmed, maybe even mortally harmed, but it seems to be more of a buildup of terror that then goes nowhere, which this lack of resolution of terror is very unbalancing for people.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. We'll pick it up on going to Lancaster, California. Susan, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Susan.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I had the strangest dream about 15 years ago, and I've always wondered what on earth it meant. It was a dream within a dream within a dream.
I love those.
It's a little hard to explain, but I'm in this upstairs bedroom with a west-facing window, and I'm asleep, and I'm dreaming that I'm asleep in this same bed, and I'm dreaming that I'm asleep in this bed dreaming. So it's really difficult to explain, but at the deepest level of the dream, I wake up and I look out this window, and there's a storm, and the clouds look almost cartoon-like. There's big, angry eyes, and there's lightning bolts coming down cartoon-like, and then a tornado forms out of the clouds and starts coming straight at the house. So I run outside, and I let my horses loose, and I take the dogs into the basement, and we all hide, and then I wake up from that level of the dream. And it's the same dream again, only a little more detailed, a little more, not at all cartoony this time. There's clouds, there's lightning, there's wind, there's a tornado that forms, and again, it's coming straight at the house. So there's three layers of this, and each layer that I wake up from gets more clear, and when I finally actually do wake up, I'm laying in bed, and I'm afraid to open my eyes. But when I do, I open my eyes, and I look out the window, and there is a storm out there, but there's no, you know, no nasty things, no lightning, no tornado or anything like that. But I've always wondered what on earth that could mean.
A tornado in a dream is a very common symbol of unexpected upheaval in life. It's a change that, you know, tornadoes are unpredictable. They spring up very suddenly. Their path is erratic. The destruction is total. And they often appear in our dreams when we feel like we could be imbalanced in that way. And dreams within dreams within dreams are quite common. And it could just be a way of you know, coming into a clearer awareness of some sort of emotional message in the dream. Environmental factors can impact us, too. You mentioned waking up and seeing that there actually is a storm. Things that are occurring in the outside world can work their way into the dream imagery. That doesn't explain away the dream. It's just a combination of factors. If it were my dream, I would try and relate it to worries over upsets that I can't control.
Okay, let's go to Mike, Rifle, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey.
Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, George?
Yeah.
I had a question for Rosemary. And,
sure.
Okay. I was wondering, can spirits travel to other places?
By spirits, do you mean spirits of the dead or all kinds of spirits?
You mean to different houses and things like that?
Yeah.
Yes, they can. Spirits, including ghosts, are often attached to place. There may be some geophysical factor that enables them to anchor in, and that's where they stay. Other times they seem to have mobility, and sometimes they attach to people, and that's how they move around. Or they attach to objects.
And sometimes they're not friendly.
That's quite often the case. There's a trickster element to a lot of these things. When they attach to people, they're more often problematic. They're looking for ways to manifest in the world. People are like food to them. It's an energy source, and that's not the kind of relationship that you would have with anything.
Have you noticed lately how many people are so not only fascinated with the afterlife, but they're having experiences like I've never heard before? How come?
I think that we are in an upswing, George, and it's a combination of factors. We've got more awareness, more willingness to talk about our experiences, but I truly think that the experiences themselves are on the upswing. And this is part of a global or collective critical mass factor. You have more people focused on the paranormal, so that opens up people in more ways. Collectively. And another is I think that we're seeing an increase in portal areas where we've got certain geophysical patterns happening. That's part of what all this 2012 is about, that I think more people are going to be encountering the paranormal. These hot spots are going to increase in intensity. There are going to be more of them, as sort of a thinning of the veils. We've got solar flare activity, which is increasing, which is going to affect magnetic factors in the planet. And there are certain magnetic patterns associated with these portal areas. So I think our ordinary reality is shifting, and we're literally being forced to come to terms with these parallel dimensions, whether we like it or not.
Do you think that emotional issues caused by a lot of stress could cause people to somehow pick up these feelings, open up portals?
I think that emotional stress has a lot to do with opening up to the paranormal in general, because psi is emotion heavy, and especially negative emotions seem to generate the right frequencies to shake things up. I've noticed in looking for patterns, for example, in the shadow people, that one of the most common elements, and it's not, you can't even say it's in the majority of cases, but it's one of the more common elements, is that people who are in states of emotional upheaval have shadow people experiences. So there's something about the generation of these intense and negatively tinged emotions which open up these doorways to other dimensions and enable things to come through into ours.
Let's go to Indio, California. You are on Coast to Coast. Marciella.
Oh, hi. How are you doing, George?
Good, thanks.
I'm just calling regarding a dream that I had.
Okay.
I dreamt that I was in Mexico with my family, with my kids and my husband, and we were somewhere in Mexico. I'm not sure where at, but anyways, all of a sudden the sky turned kind of weird, and people were like, oh my god, look at the clouds. They're like the clouds were forming kind of weird, like really like white and thick. And as I looked up at the clouds, I saw in the clouds there was figures, and the figures, it was like the Virgin Mary. And then that cloud passed by, and then another cloud came by, and it was another picture of a Virgin Mary, like a different type of Virgin Mary, you know, I think with Jesus Christ in her hand. And then all of a sudden another one came, and it was actually Jesus Christ, like his figure. And when I saw that, I was like, I saw his face, and I saw him clearly. I felt in my dream like my body was like getting like really like light, and I felt like I was like I wanted to faint. All of a sudden, like my body just like, I don't know, in the dream I fainted, or I don't know if I died or what. The next thing I know is that I woke up somewhere else, and I had my son, and I was holding my son in my arms, and then I was holding my other little boy's hand. And I was in a different place where there was like a bunch of people walking around, and I mean, I don't know if that was heaven or if that was like purgatory or what, but it felt so real. When I woke up from the dream, I was crying. I was like so emotional.
All right, religious dreams. Is that standard?
People have them all the time, yes. And where they're very intense, they feel very realistic. The figures in the sky is often a symbol of some sort of spiritual message of importance for us. And if this were my dream...
Why the crying?
Actually, people cry a lot when they have intense spiritual experiences and dreams. It's like having a mystical experience sometimes. The dreams are quite powerful and overwhelming. Messages in the sky from religious figures. If that were my dream, I would look at it. What do these things personally mean to me? Comfort, salvation, connection to the divine, and how can I relate that to what's going on in my life? Sometimes we have these big spiritual dreams simply to remind us that we have a connection to the divine. They help us realize something deeper about ourselves, and that may be the purpose of a dream like this.
Interesting. Okay, next up, San Diego we go. Chris, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hi, George, Rosemary. I'll go real fast. I had a very interesting experience. There was an elevator. The elevator opened, and I saw, you know, three people go in the elevator, short, kind of oriental, dark, light skin. So I go to the elevator, and there's nobody there. So I put one foot in and one foot outside the elevator, and this really strong message came into my head saying, you can come, but you can't go back. And I wasn't afraid, but the decision, of course, I made is not to go because I have friends, and I thought, well, you know, so that really did happen, and that elevator was open for 3 days and never shut. Is that bizarre?
Well, that's interesting because three is a very important symbol in a lot of spiritual meanings of things. Things come in threes. Three is the number of spiritual ascent. It's
people die in threes.
People die in threes. Spirits often come in threes. The negative spirits do, and even the positive ones. Elevators are often a symbol of either a descent or ascent into another state of being, stage of life, or state of consciousness. So you've got the potential to move up or down here, and I don't know if the elevator is going up or down. Three people go in. If it were my dream, I would relate the oriental significance to it. For me, it would mean maybe a monk figure or some sort of adepts. And the message, you can come, but you can't go back. Well, anytime we undergo a profound change or we step onto a path or accept a challenge, or you can't go back. A life is never the same. And so this dream is to me really a threshold dream. It's about making some sort of very profound change for which there is no point of return, but it's not necessarily negative. I'm not picking up like a negative feeling from this dream. So it's like the dream is saying the choice is yours. You can take it or not. And my feeling is that if you don't take it now, you'll be presented with it at some point down the road.
Let's go to Chicago. Rick, first time caller. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rosemary, I was just wondering, because many times a year, for many years and many times a year, I would have the same reoccurring dream.
Mm-hmm.
It was always that my wife was leaving me, and I would ask her why, and she would say, well, you know. And it was just so disturbing that I would wake up in tears, you know, to discover she was next to me, and it was just a dream. But then some years later, she got cancer, and then 3 years later, she died.
Hmm.
So I was wondering, do you think there might have been some connection between that dream and her dying?
It's quite possible, Rick. There have been cases documented in the dream literature where people have had precognitive warning dreams well in advance of the actual event. Usually those dreams happen very close to an event, within a few days, within a couple of weeks. But there have been cases where those sorts of things have occurred even years out. So it's to look at it from the healing aspect of it, and I think dreams ultimately are healing, even when they have negative content to them, is that this was a way of helping you prepare for that.
Want to take a jump at 2012? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think that we're going to have instant change, cataclysms, radical disasters and things like that. I think we'll wake up and still be here. We're already into the change of 2012, and it's just going to intensify as we get there. I do think that ordinary reality is shifting and expanding, as we were talking about earlier with all of these paranormal experiences. And when we hit these peaks of magnetic shifts that might affect these portal areas, we could have some very dramatic experiences going on a mass level, where we might have manifestations of more spirit presences, positive and negative. People are going to have to learn how to deal with that. And we're going to be seeing things in different ways, picking up on each other's thoughts telepathically, things that are going to make us very uncomfortable. The world as we know it is going to become a very different dimension. Not instantly, but that's where we're headed.
You don't think we're going to get blasted out of the skies, from the skies? Huh?
I don't. I've never been fond of doomsday thinking. Mm-hmm. And
You and Ed Dames would get along well.
I know Ed, and I haven't seen him in a long time. But we could have more natural disasters that will wreak havoc on the planet, but I don't think we're going to see a complete destruction of the Earth or of the human race.
Why all the hoopla about 2012?
The human race seems to be naturally oriented, even desirous of doomsday. And we find this throughout history. There have always been doomsday cycles and ends of the world, ends of eras, the final confrontations between good and evil. But then always a new era starts up. It's never like the end of something and oblivion. It's the clearing away of something so that a new era can start. And in many respects, I think that's what's going on now, is the chaos that we're experiencing is a way of weeding out the old and undesirable so that something new can come into place.
Rosemary, of every subject that you have handled in the past, angels, dreams, ghosts and spirits, witches, witchcraft, you name it, you've looked at all of them. Is there one area that you find to be the most fascinating, or all of them?
It's hard for me to pick favorites. I can certainly name things in terms of complex, creepy. Everything that I've looked into feels like such an important part of the puzzle. Shadow people, I think, are one of the creepiest phenomena.
And strangest.
And strangest, absolutely. And, you know, right now I'm exploring the djinn connection there, and that's very mysterious and very troubling in its own ways. I think that one of the most exciting areas is what we're learning about how we can use our consciousness and intention to manifest things. It's a power that I don't think we haven't got a clue what we're capable of.
Absolutely. Rosemary, thank you for being on the program. Appreciate it.
It's been great, George.
Have a safe flight back.
Thank you. And you have a safe flight tomorrow, too.
Oh, a long day indeed.
For both of us.
Absolutely.